Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, one and all, to Web Sleuth Radio, where a little dab will do you. Hi, my name's Tricia Griffith. We're broadcasting from just outside Park City, Utah. And boy, do we have a show for you tonight. But first, Web Sleuth Radio is brought to you by a fantastic organization called DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. This is a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. We have a loaded show tonight. First of all, we have Kim Ster, our executive producer, one of our administrators at Web Sleuth, and she'll be taking your calls and handling pretty much everything. Kim Ster is not only our executive producer, she's also a corporate security liaison, and I've promoted her to anti-doping program coordinator, so she wears many hats. Joining us tonight in our radio show is one of our most loved members on Web Sleuth, AZ Lawyer. She's incredible. She's a verified attorney. Welcome, AZ.
Thank you, Tricia.
And also, we have our administrator from Web Sleuth, Beach. And Beach is not only an incredible administrator like Kim Ster, but Beach is also a certified paralegal. And Beach, welcome, my dear.
Well, hi, everyone. Thank you, Tricia.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to start out with a quote here. He oozed charm from every pore. He oiled his way across the floor. That's a quote from My Fair Lady, and it's also the way Jeff Ashton describes one of his favorite people, Jose Baez, in his book Imperfect Justice, Prosecuting Casey Anthony. Jeff Ashton, welcome, welcome, welcome so much to Web Sleuth Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here. You're the first person that's picked up that quote from My Fair Lady. I got to compliment you on that one.
Oh, I'm telling you, that is just seared in my brain. That is so hilarious. And you know what's so great about it is it's so true. I'm right up there with you, man. You know?
Yeah, he always reminded me of that particular quote.
It's beautiful. I just can't think of a better way to describe him. Mr. Ashton, you have made the media rounds like crazy, and you've been doing this for quite some time, and so I'm sure it gets a little tiresome being asked the same questions over and over again, and I'm sure you'll get some of that tonight, but I can assure you that the members of Web Sleuth are going to be probably a bit surprising to you in their questions. They're going to ask you things that, I don't know, maybe you might not even know the answers to, but I guarantee you this is going to be a different interview. But it's been brought up many times that you have talked about the fact that Casey Anthony got lost in all of this, the trial and Casey and her parents and all of, excuse me, the crap that went on. What would you like us to know about Casey Anthony? And what would you like us to know that perhaps it was never brought out?
Well, you know, I think that the trial did actually bring out as much as you can about a 2.5-year-old child. I mean, she was, you know, a bright, beautiful little girl, and you know, and I think we brought that out. But as compared to the entire trial, it was, you know, a second in a matter of days. So, you know, what can you say about a 2.5-year-old? I mean, there's no such thing as a bad 2.5-year-old. They're all just wonderful and they're all treasures, and Casey was no exception. I think my reference is more to the fact that, you know, people became more concerned about Casey than about the truth for Casey. Both, and I speak of that both as, you know, in Cindy Anthony's case and also to some extent maybe in the jury's case. So that's really that's what I'm talking about there, is sort of where people's focus was and how I think it kind of got perverted a bit.
Got lost, perverted is another perfect description. We're going to start with our attorneys and legal experts in our Web Sleuth studio tonight. AZ Lawyer, I know you are bursting at the seams with questions for Jeff Ashton, so why don't you go first?
Can I cheat and ask a two-part question, Tricia?
Absolutely, my dear.
All right, I have a two-part question about duct tape.
If you could speak up just a little bit for me, okay?
No problem. Two-part question about duct tape. And the first one is, we went through the duct tape photos from the FBI in great detail and attempted to figure out where they would be placed on Kaylee's skull based on indentations and the length and all of that. And one thing that surprised everybody was when we saw the blurred out photos that were released in the media, the photos that were showed at trial, it looked like the duct tape was in a circle instead of all being on the front of the skull. And that was a little confusing, but it was hard to tell because we're looking at the blurred out photos. So
right,
one question
right.
is, was that duct tape in a circle like that?
No, it wasn't in a circle. It basically extended from the left, you know, sort of tip of the mandible, tip of the jawbone, if you will, near sort of near below the ear, all the way around the face to the same position on the other side, basically from, you know, below one ear to below the other and across the face. The best pictures that show that, obviously, are the ones that y'all have not seen,
right.
which is sort of a picture taken sort of from the bottom of the skull looking up, and then you can appreciate the full length of the duct tape. Because the pieces were, I think, each about 9 inches long or approximately that. So basically not all the way around the head. No, the pieces were cut and then placed, you know, one over the other approximately from ear to ear.
Okay, yeah, and that's how our pictures generally looked, but I guess they're in the pictures that were released based on the blurring. I think some of the leaves and that sort of thing looked like part of the duct tape circle, and it was hard to tell.
That could be.
And the second part of the question is about the loose piece of duct tape that was the same brand that was found elsewhere and had fringe hairs on it, and we all consider the possibility that piece was, for example, around Kaylee's wrists. Was that something you considered presenting as a theory to the jury?
We didn't. The main reason was that the tape didn't appear to have been overlapping, at least not that we could tell. You know, it appeared to be about the same length as the other pieces of tape, and appeared to be, you know, another piece that might have been over the first three. But it didn't really have any characteristics that would have allowed us to argue that it was around her wrists. And quite frankly, I don't think it was. My theory has always been that the chloroform was used to incapacitate Kaylee, and that the duct tape was placed over her nose and mouth to keep her from breathing. So I didn't really think that it was, and didn't really have any evidence that it was.
AZ Lawyer, does that take care of it, or do you need a follow-up?
That does take care of it. Thank you.
Okay, we'll be coming back to you in just a moment. Now we're going to go to Beach, our resident paralegal, one of our several paralegals that we have on Web Sleuths. And Beach, why don't you go ahead with Mr. Ashton?
I also have a two-part question, if that's
okay.
All right.
Absolutely.
The first one should be fairly short, but Mr. Ashton, we noticed right maybe 2 months before trial, because we'd all been interested in the diary. The one that had the 03 written and
exactly
when it was written. And we noticed that y'all sent it back out for forensic testing again real shortly before trial. I want to say a couple of months before. What was the prosecution's best guess? Because we went through, at one point, I think we thought maybe 2005. Obviously, the entry was pretty incriminating if it could have been proven, but...
Right. Now, I don't recall, honestly, us sending it out for a second set of tests. I only recall it going to the FBI once. However, once we tracked down, obviously, that the diary was manufactured, you know, after the date that appeared to be in there, we started looking into sort of the content of what was written. And my recollection is that we determined, based upon some person that was mentioned in the diary itself, that the entry was actually from something in high school. You know, we satisfied ourselves that it was not related to the crime or was not contemporaneous with the crime. Obviously, we don't know why the rest of the pages were torn out or what might have been on them. But as far as what we could find that was written there, and also I believe they were able to raise some impressions from a page that was removed, but it my recollection is it referenced something, and we've checked it out and said, okay, this has got to be from high school, so it's not related to us.
Okay, correct. And honestly, AZ Lawyer and I both truth that, and I believe we came up with 2005 as much as we wanted to believe it was later, but I think we probably came to the same conclusion we all did.
Right.
And my second question, and this has been something that honestly has haunted me from for 2 years, and I think several people, and I don't understand why it never came out more, but I'm going to ask it, because one of my favorite moments was the end of the hearing when you got to stick it to Vibe and get him to admit where the $200,000 came from.
Right.
And anyway, it came all out that he had $275,000, and Judge Strickland had made a big hoopla over that it had to be, the public had a right to know that he was asking for taxpayer money for this indigency status, and he was only able to, well, account for a portion of it, and, you know, Baez got $90,000, I think, in the line, $22,500, and then Marty, some PR person, got $10,000, but he was still missing, I believe it was $152,500, and he it never came back out in the public. He met with Judge Strickland behind closed doors, and it never was released to anyone's knowledge. Do you know if that was sealed or why it was never released?
Well, we don't. That, as I recall, what the judge instructed him was to provide the court with his trust account records, and that was to be done ex parte, in other words, not in the public view, not in our view. And I assume the judge did that and was satisfied with it. We've never learned anything more than the public has about the money or where it went, and that would not be surprising that we wouldn't have learned that, because obviously that goes to work product, and so that wouldn't have been available to us. You know, whether the bar will ever take a look at that is another question. I mean, I have the same kind of questions, because in the process of deposing experts, you know, and usually most of your pretrial money is going to go to experts, and we couldn't find any experts that were paid any money. There were a couple that we never actually deposed. Henry Lee, we never deposed because he was withdrawn, and Kathy Reichs never testified either. So, you know, if one of them got a bunch of that money, then that might explain some of it. But we never really did figure out where that money went, and quite frankly, that's always been a little bit of a question in my mind. You know, where did the rest of that money go?
Well, we know Dominic Casey didn't get any, not that he deserved it.
as far as I know.
And, you know, and I'm going to let other people go, but I just want to say one short thing here before I get off and let other people have a turn, and that is that, you know, we were talking about, it's always broken my heart. It didn't matter from the first hearing. One of the hardest things watching, and I don't know if you're aware or you've been told this, but from the very first hearing when the public got to see you, Linda, and Jeff. I don't know if you will ever realize how much we all appreciated you did for Kaylee, because it was so hard to look at that courtroom scene, and I don't think I expected it, and I expected it to get easier, but it never did. But everyone that was there fighting for Kaylee was a virtual stranger to that child, and it was very hard to see no one in her family sitting on the side. I'm not judging them. I understand, but that was a hard thing to watch, and I just want to, you know, pass the word, please, to Linda and Frank, and thank you all for everything you did for Kaylee.
I will do that. I will certainly do that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Beach. I have a couple of questions from Web Sleuth members, and they are coming fast and furious. Was Lee Anthony given immunity, and if so, why?
No, Lee Anthony was not given immunity, other than there is an automatic what's called use immunity that comes with being subpoenaed. Every witness that is subpoenaed, if they say anything or are compelled to say anything that's incriminating, it can't be used against them. That's just by operation of statute. But no, he wasn't given any immunity beyond what is automatic to every witness.
One of our members named Tink wants to know, was there any evidence excluded by the judge that Mr. Ashton thinks would have made a difference if it had been allowed?
No, there wasn't any evidence that was excluded by the judge. There was evidence that is excluded by the rules of evidence, which we didn't even attempt to offer because we knew it would be inadmissible.
Like
what?
You know,
there's evidence that could have come from Cindy's coworkers about Cindy's comments about Casey and their relationship. You know, there was a great deal, and I talk about this in the book quite a bit, of information about a very dysfunctional relationship and some very serious misgivings that Cindy had about Casey's ability to be a mother or desire to be a mother, for that matter. But those things were hearsay, and so, you know, those could not have come in under the rules of evidence. We didn't even offer – we didn't try to offer them because we knew that. And, of course, you know, the biggest thing is Casey's actual version, which was given to the doctors. That obviously, you know, the fact that Casey didn't believe that Kaylee died by accident either and agreed that she couldn't have gotten in the pool by herself, obviously that might have made a difference, but under the rules of evidence that we have involving work product and attorney-client privilege, you know, we didn't attempt to get them in because we knew that they weren't admissible. So, you know, there's nothing the judge excluded that, you know, that could have made a difference. We just knew what wasn't coming in and didn't even offer it because that's sort of how we do things.
No, yeah, you kind of follow the rules, which is, you know,
right. I mean,
shocking.
We have to follow the rules. You know, we don't try to sneak things in that aren't admissible.
Exactly.
Not to say that anybody else did. I'm not accusing any.
Oh, of course not. And we're not even suggesting that you are. We are, but you're not. Mr. Ashton, I was sitting here and I had the trial on. I'm at my computer and I can't even remember what day it was into the trial, but it was when Yuri Melich was on the stand and Jose Baez gets up there and asks him his first question, which was something to the effect of, so do you go by any other names other than Dick Tracy or Lando? And you know, I couldn't have been more surprised if Richard Simmons would have walked in naked in my house. I mean, I was just stunned. Did that upset you that Yuri Melich came on Web Sleuth and posted? Did that bother you?
No, it didn't bother me. I mean, I think in retrospect, Yuri probably wishes he hadn't done that. Not that he did anything wrong, but just because, you know, it causes problems that don't need to exist or causes suggestions of problems. I mean, he didn't say anything that was inappropriate.
He
and
absolutely,
you know,
did
people
not.
People can, you know, associate as much as they want. So it didn't bother me other than I felt bad for Yuri because Yuri is the ultimate professional. And I know that in retrospect, he feels bad about having created that non-issue, but still I'm sure it's somewhat of an embarrassment for him.
Yeah,
so.
And I felt terrible for him because he was so gracious to our members on Web Sleuth. All he did basically was come on and say thank you for your support when he broke his leg and then answer general questions about police work, nothing to do with the case. And I thought that was so gracious and lovely. And then to have Jose Baez do that, what it does is it scares other police officers from coming on Web Sleuth and maybe offering their help. And that really, it upset me for him that Jose Baez did that to him. Okay, Kimster, are you there, my darling?
Yes, I am. We actually have a caller who has a question for Mr. Ashton.
Okay, why don't we go ahead with that?
Sure, this is Patty Marie. Go ahead, Patty Marie, you're on the air.
Hi, boy, this is thrilling and exciting. Mr. Ashton, I loved your book.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm nervous here. I want to ask you, we've been following on Web Sleuth very closely, you know, for the last 3 years. I want to ask you, what was it like to be up close and personal with this cast of characters? What was it like to be near Casey and Cindy and George and Jose? Can you just describe that to us?
You know, really, you know, none of the characters that you saw were so far outside of the people that I've dealt with before. I mean, the situations were different, but, you know, Baez really wasn't, you know, it was variations on a theme. I mean, I've dealt with people like him before many times in my career, so he wasn't really surprising in that regard. I mean, I think his deliberate disregard of the judge's orders, that was surprising. That was something that I had not seen before. And did surprise me that he would go that far in defiance of particularly Judge Perry. You know, Cindy, I've dealt before with parents who are in denial. I mean, that's very common when you have a child that's charged with a serious crime. You know, you're very accustomed to the parents just being in denial and not wanting to accept it.
Did you ever talk with her informally, like on the elevator or out in the hall?
Sure. Yeah, I did. You know, at various times during the 3 years, we would have you know, been on speaking terms, so to speak, and other times not so much. But I found her to be a very pleasant person. I mean, outside of the courtroom and outside of Casey Anthony, you know, Cindy and George are very, very normal, likable people. I mean, they really are. I mean, the entire family, if you remove Casey and everything having to do with her from the family is actually quite normal. They're very likable folks. So, you know, there's nobody in the family that you wouldn't be able to sit down and have a cup of coffee with if Casey weren't around.
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't her brother Rick brought in?
Because Rick didn't know anything, again, that wasn't hearsay. You know, that's the difficulty, is we had a lot of information from people as to what somebody told them about this family and its relationship, but nothing that was firsthand. And absent firsthand information, it's just not admissible. It's all hearsay.
Patty Marie, thank you so much. We do have to go. I'm going to put you back on hold so you can listen if you'd like, okay?
Thank you. Thank you. What a thrill.
Thanks, Patty Marie. You're a sweetheart. Mr. Ashton, we've just got them coming fast and absolutely furious here. I want to go back to AZ Lawyer. AZ Lawyer, I know you have a list of forensic questions. Why don't you go ahead and give us another one?
You know, yeah, one of the other things that we really spent a lot of time on were the images of the trunk liner. And finally got it down to where we could do a fairly simple enhancement of the photo and the outline that really looked like the outline of a child on her side in a sleeping position really jumped out at us after a very simple enhancement of the photo. We wondered whether there was some reason that there wasn't an enhancement of that type done, whether it was something where you didn't feel that it would be obvious enough to be admissible, and whether or not it was possible to see the outline in person looking at the trunk liner.
Well, I'll answer the last question first. Actually, the stain outline, if you will, in the trunk liner was not visible to the naked eye, at least not by the time, you know, I got to it a month or two later. There was only really one photograph that showed it in any kind of detail, and that's the one we use. So, you know, stains like that are very, very difficult because, you know, you don't really know exactly what part of the image you're looking at is the stain and what part is something else. So we felt that any attempts, and there have been attempts using alternate light sources to try to get a different image. You can't really alter a photograph by digital enhancement. That's very, very tricky, and the law really does not favor, photographs that are artificially or digitally altered. So that's probably not something that we would have tried to do. The difficulty with trying to draw too great a conclusion from the shape of the image was that the eye sees what it sees. And quite frankly, sometimes you can see things. If you're looking for something, you can see it, but you just like it to see something else. For us, it was most important simply that there was a stain there. And I never really saw a photograph where I felt that I could see the outline of anything that I would recognize. So I just don't think it would have been an argument that we would have been comfortable making to say that this, you know, looks like a particular outline. I just don't think that we would have done that.
You'll have to go on the web thread and look at our enhancement and see what you can.
I'll do that sometime.
Yeah, I know in Arizona, I know they will only allow the enhanced photographs if it can be explained what it is that the enhancement is picking up on and why that would be connected with what you're trying to show us there.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, we'd have to, you know, we would, and we really couldn't, and the FBI, you know, did photographs in a number of different alternate light sources trying to raise the image greater, you know, light sources that react to certain proteins or lipids and things like that. But even those just sort of showed a general outline, and there was no way to get a photograph that showed a recognizable outline and then attribute it to, you know, the decomp fluid. So we didn't really try to do that. We didn't think it would be effective.
Right. And did the trunk liner go back to the jury room with the rest of the evidence?
Yes, the trunk liner went back with the rest of the evidence. And the stain was actually on the spare tire cover, but that went back too.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. And so the spare tire cover went back, and it still smelled of decomposition, you said, at that time.
Yeah, it did. It did to me. I mean, when I opened the box that it had been contained in, even though it wasn't really an air-sealed container, it was just a cardboard box with tape on it, you know, I could still detect it. Now, of course, I know what I'm smelling. So whether the jury would have, you know, identified that odor, you know, who knows, but they certainly could have smelled it. The other thing about that, you know, most of the stain from the spare tire cover was actually gone because it had been cut out for examination. So you really couldn't look at the spare tire cover and see a recognizable stain because most of it had been removed.
Well, that's a good point. The most stained part was the part that was cut out and sent for testing, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So, like, the vast majority of the stain was not there anymore. And
there was no way to look at it and really see a complete outline the way that we would on our enhanced photos because most of it was missing at that point.
Right. Okay. Like I said, the best demonstrator of it was the one photograph. And there were other photographs that didn't show it as clearly. So it's a lot of those things are sort of tricks of how you catch the light from the photograph and how it reflects off of the stained area. So.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, AZ Lawyer. And Beach, let's go to you. I know you have a load of questions, so why don't you go ahead and take your turn.
Well, okay. Thank you. I have a question. What was your theory on why Dominic Casey was searching back behind Hook Spring Drive with, you know, I mean, other, you know, we won't go into how professional any of these people were, but he seemed very intent back there. Did that concern you? Did y'all ever consider he had reason to be searching?
Sure, we considered it. I mean, we looked into his phone records, you know, around the time of the search, and honestly, the only person that we could identify, that I recall being identified, was the psychic lady. So, you know, as far as I know, that's who we got it from. You know, we tried to find other pathways for that information, and, you know, we don't know for sure, but all we can tell is who he called, and those were the people he called, as I recall.
Yeah, and I guess I was referring more to, you know, Casey, she's close to home, and all these cryptic messages that came through to Lee and to Cindy and all that. You know, it's all speculation, I realize.
I just don't think that Cindy and George knew anything more than they were saying they knew. I know a lot of people suspect, but I just from having had the contact I did with them and everything, I just don't think they knew. I really don't.
Yeah, I agree with you in retrospect. I had my doubts for a while, but I agree.
Sure.
I just think some of maybe the cryptic, you know, statements, they were, my goodness, she talks cryptic a lot of times, you know,
yeah.
And maybe they just got used to looking at it like that. And,
right.
And I wondered, and then my other short one, and this is, because I know you've, 30, 31 years, that you were with the state attorney's office there.
Right.
And I know you have several cases that you tried before Judge Perry, and he's hard to read. I thought he was a fantastic judge, and I couldn't have been, as working in law, I thought the stupidest move ever made was when they asked for the recusal of Judge Strickland. I could not believe they did that, but I was thrilled with it. Just like you were, I read your book, and I just couldn't get over it. But I will say, do you think he was surprised at the verdict?
Yes, I have no doubt that he was surprised. I think he was shocked. I think he was as shocked as the rest of us were.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I'll be honest, I thought one reason he gave bias so much leeway, which got so, I know it aggravated so many of our members that are not as familiar in law. I understood what was going on somewhat because, let's face it, this was his first, he was way out of his league here. And
yeah.
I think he was just, of course.
Oh, I think we lost Beach.
Oops,
did we
lost somebody.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what she was trying to get at is he was focusing on not having issues on appeal.
Right. I think he was. And I think, you know, there's always a subtle calculus going on in judges' brains, I think, when they're sitting on a case and they're wanting to give the defense, if they feel like the state's got a good case, they'll bend over backwards for the defense under the theory that, well, the state's going to win this case, and so I'm going to eliminate any issues as long as it doesn't hurt the state. And so, you know, I don't mean to say that dominates their thinking, but I know in the back of their minds that's probably always there. So I think that is something they think about.
We have a question from the chat room. It's a great question from Keish. Do you feel that Cindy meddled with evidence, like replacing lost bedding or anything along those lines?
I don't really think so. I mean, there was some suggestion early in the case that she might have given given the police a hairbrush, saying it was Kaylee's when it wasn't. But you know, the evidence that they supplied us did give us the initial sort of identifying DNA on Kaylee, and it did turn out to be her. So I don't really think so. I mean, there were so many things that Cindy, you know, early in the case, or even, you know, in her deposition, which was about a year and a half after everything happened, you know, where she could have said things differently or changed her testimony in ways that really would have affected the case, and she didn't. I mean, in her deposition, you know, she was, and I think I talk about in the book, you know, she was more than willing to give us the facts that all the rest of us put together to show that Casey was involved, and she would give them freely, but then, you know, refuse to draw the ultimate conclusion that the rest of us saw. So I just don't see anywhere where I feel like she altered evidence or anything else. In fact, the only area where I really think that she wasn't truthful was with trying to claim the chloroform searches, you know, and that just,
yes,
I think was just totally, totally not true. And that was, I think, deliberate on her part. But aside from that, you know, she kind of said it pretty consistently.
Mr. Ashton, let's talk about that when Cindy Anthony got up and said that she was the one who did the chloroform searches. Could you have been any more surprised and stunned? Did you see that coming anywhere?
I didn't see. I mean, in her deposition, she had left open the possibility that she did the searches in claiming that she was searching for chlorophyll and that maybe she accidentally looked up chloroform. And it was in a very vague kind of thing. It was, I think I might have done that. So when she came on the stand and definitively said, I did this on this day, that did surprise me. And I was just sort of sat there and thought to myself, oh, come on. You know, you don't need to do this. Don't put yourself in that position. So,
right.
You know, that did surprise me that she but, you know, I think it was late in the trial and someone must have gotten to her and said, you've got to help her. And so she just came up with this thing. And
Do you feel that Jose Baez knew she was lying and still put her on the stand anyway?
Well, I mean, I don't think, you know, to say that an attorney knows someone is lying, there's only two ways that an attorney can know someone is lying, and that is that they personally witnessed the thing the witness is talking about, which, of course, he didn't, and the other is the witness telling the lawyer, I am going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's knowing and there's knowing. I mean, I don't think he suborned perjury in that he knew for sure that she was lying. I think he probably... if he were to be honest about it, which I doubt he would at this point,
right,
would admit that, yeah, you know, I think she made it up. But, yeah, that's far from suborning perjury, so I wouldn't accuse him of that.
Right. Let's go to our phone lines here. We have RR004, and I have no idea what that stands for, but she's a very loved member on Web Sleuth. Are you there, my friend?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Tricia.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. You have a question for Jeff Ashton.
I absolutely do. First, I want to thank him for being here. I'm so happy that he made it onto Blog Talk Radio. And my first and foremost question is, Mr. Ashton, did Dr. Voss ever give you any ideas to what could have produced that much chloroform in the trunk?
No, he didn't. You know, the only thing that Dr. Voss could really say about the chloroform, you know, because he's coming at it from the perspective of studying chloroform produced in decomposition, so all he could really say was it's you know, 10,000 times more than I would expect to see from decomposition, so that decomp wouldn't explain it. But aside from that, he didn't really have the background to say any more than that. You know, it was, you had people in different perspectives saying, you know, well, this is not what I would expect to see. You know, Dr. Weiss, who worked with Dr. Voss, who was more of an environmental researcher, environmental chemist, you know, also said, well, you know, I've been studying, you know, environmental samples from a number of different areas and purposes, and et cetera, and, you know, I've never seen this much chloroform. So, you know, nobody could really give us anything more than simply, I can't find an explanation for this chloroform.
So did you imagine that she made it herself, that she went to the store? I'm sure that you sent out law enforcement trying to find some sort of, I don't know, receipt or video, because I know that there were some videos that we didn't see, like the video of Home Depot. Did you think that perhaps she went out and purchased it?
Well, as I recall, chloroform is not something you can just go to the store and buy. I don't think stores carry it. I believe it can be purchased online or it can be made, and making it is actually, in terms of the chemicals used, isn't that complicated. It's not hard to make. Now, there's some thermal reactions that come with producing chloroform that make it a challenge to actually make it, but it can be done. We don't really know. I mean, we checked her computer to see if there was any online purchases. We couldn't find that. So we don't really know whether she, you know, got it from a boyfriend, got it on the street, bought it on the internet, made it herself. You know, we just don't know.
And the point was that she got it. And my last question to you is, do you get the feeling that this isn't over, that there is something in store for Casey Anthony down the road?
As far as the legal case, yes, it's absolutely over. I mean, there's nothing more that can be done involving, you know, this incident. As far as her life goes, I would not expect her life to be a happy one. I hope, as I've said many times, that no one related to this case does anything to Casey or bothers her in any way. I hope that people just ignore her. But you know, when you have this narcissistic personality with this affinity for lying, you know, that's going to come back up again. I mean, she's going to do that again. And, you know, the next person that she does it to may not resort to legal methods of redress. And that's probably where her greater danger is.
And how do you feel about Kaylee's Law?
Well, you know, I've heard a number of different versions of Kaylee's Law. I've read one out of Maryland. I think it has some very, very good aspects to it. I particularly like the aspect of that I've heard suggested, which would increase the penalties for lying to law enforcement officers when it involves a missing child. I think that would be particularly appropriate to make those things a felony because of the massive amount of resources that are brought to bear whenever there's a missing child. I mean, every time you have a missing child, you know, it's all hands on deck. Everybody drops everything, the entire country, the entire county, the entire world. You know, pays attention. And I think to invoke that kind of attention and expenditure of resources falsely certainly is something that should be punished more severely. Other aspects of the law, you know, attempting to make it a crime, and I, in a general sense, to not report a missing child, that needs to be written in a very it's an area that's fraught with constitutional issues. So, you know, depending on how the statute is written, it may be fine. But to me, the most exciting thing is the increased punishment for false statement, because that happens not infrequently.
RR004, thank you so much. And Mr. Ashton, it was RR that was instrumental in me getting in touch with your publicist. So thank you so much for doing that, my dear. Let's go to one more phone caller. We're talking with Jeff Ashton, prosecutor of the Casey Anthony case. And let's go to Bill, area code 336. Bill, are you there, my dear?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, Bill, go ahead. You're on with Jeff Ashton.
Jeff, I admire your professionalism. My question is, why didn't you object to Casey constantly shaking her head in the negative anytime one of your witnesses was on the stand?
Well, we did as best we could. Judges are, I mean, what we actually objected to be specific, was we brought up to the judge the issue of the defense attorney's constant participation in Casey's displays, the arm around the back, the patting, the comforting, all of that stuff we raised with the judge a number of times, and the judge didn't put a stop to it. You know, defendants in court, unless they are being disruptive, judges let them get away with a lot. And there was nothing that she did that was so over the top or outrageous. I mean, I know watching it on TV with the camera, you know, directly on her, it obviously elevates that a great deal. But there was nothing that went, you know, into the area of being disruptive or anything like that. So, you know, we didn't say anything because we knew that the judge wouldn't do anything.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you, Bill. We love you, man. Thank you for calling. Mr. Ashton, thank you so much. We still have lots of questions. We're just going to keep on keeping on, if that's okay with you.
Yep, I'm good till 9.
Okay, good till 9. Okay, I hope we can squeeze a little bit more time out of you, just a titch more, because we're going so long here. I mean, we have so many questions. Kimster, what do we have in the chat room going on?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many questions here. We could go on till tomorrow, but I don't think Mr. Ashton has that much time. I have Lessiade. She has a question. What were the flurry of phone calls about that Casey made on the evening of the 16th?
These would be the phone calls I know in the afternoon there were calls to Cindy around 4 o'clock. What those were about, we don't really know. According to Cindy, I don't believe they ever actually connected or talked to each other. Those are the only ones I'm aware of. I'm not aware of another flurry of calls necessarily that evening. I know there were calls to Tony, obviously, but those are the only ones I recall. But we don't really know what they were about.
Okay, Kimster, next question.
Kimberly wants to know, will George forgive Casey for her accusations of sexual abuse, or has he already forgiven her?
I don't know the answer to that. I would tend to doubt that George will be able to forgive Casey for everything involved in this case. But I don't know.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. I'm going to jump in here. We're talking with Jeff Ashton, the prosecutor in the Casey Anthony case, and of course he's written that incredible book about the trial, and. Boy, there's so many questions here. I'm trying to get the best one here for you from me. Actually, we're going to take one from Kat that she posted this on Web Sleuth. If you could go back and do anything differently during the trial, what would you have done differently, if anything?
You know, there are things that I talk about in the book that I wish we'd done differently. You know, the whole chloroform search problem with the inconsistency in the two reports, other small things, but. Nothing that I think would have made a difference, nothing significant. I mean, I've thought about it a good deal, and you know, if I went back and was going to do this trial again, I can't honestly say that I would do it differently. You know, for this jury, there's nothing we could have done differently.
Why do you think that?
I just think this jury, because of the process, the combination of the process of the pretrial publicity and the way jury selection is done. I kind of illustrated sometime in my book signings by doing this. You know, I asked the people present at the book signing that I'm speaking to, you know, how many of them before the trial thought that Casey was guilty? And, of course, the majority, vast majority of them raised their hands that they did. And I explained to them that because of that, none of them could have been on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you believe sort of polls that have come out, you know, up to 90% of the populace before the trial thought she was guilty. The problem is that then excludes all those people from being on the jury. So what you have left is that little 10% group that, either don't know about the case, and you know it's hard to imagine who that is concerned about the world around them wouldn't know about the case,
mm-hmm.
or people that have heard the evidence and not been persuaded by it. So we sort of had a jury that was skewed to skepticism from the beginning. So there's nothing we could have told this jury, I believe, that would have made a difference.
In your book. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kimster.
I was just going to say that was very kind and politically correct the way you worded that about the jury.
That speech, by the way.
I'll be honest. I mean, I took that. Well, I was very involved with this case. I moderated that forum for 3 years and flipped the evidence very heavily. And even I considered the things that the jury did not get to see that we knew. My biggest issue, I think I could have handled the verdict better if they, after 300 pieces of evidence almost and 90 witnesses or whatever, I mean, they looked at nothing. I really have a big issue that they, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's difficult for me, too. I mean, it is difficult. It is difficult to think about the jury verdict and realize that they never asked. I mean, the physical evidence they had back in the jury room, but you know, they never asked to review any of Casey's statements to law enforcement. The video, the audio tape statements. They never asked to review any of the videotape conversations, which I thought were pretty crucial to this whole issue of whether George might have been involved or not. So, yeah, that is a little bit harder for me to deal with and to say that they did a good job because you know they obviously focused on one single thing. As I've said many times, you know, the facts and law give the jury the ability to do what they want to do. And for whatever reason that we will never know, this jury did not want to convict her. And when a jury doesn't want to convict a defendant, they will find reasonable doubt. They will. So,
have you heard anything from the jury or heard through the grapevine anything from the jury at all?
No, I mean I only know what y'all know. The two interviews that were done with the foreman, one with the foreman and one with the one juror, the one that came out right away. Aside from that, nothing other than at one of my book signings, I was handed a nice little note from one of the other jurors that simply said, thank you for your kind words in the book. So that was the only communication I had, and I have not sought any others, and I would not seek any other communication with them.
In your book, Imperfect Justice, Prosecuting Casey Anthony, you're very sympathetic in a lot of ways to George Anthony, and George Anthony, I don't know, this is just my opinion, and I could be way off base. But I think he lied about the affair, and I'm wondering if he hadn't lied, if that might have made a difference. Maybe it wouldn't, like you have said. Do you think, two questions, do you really believe that his suicide note was for real? Because there have been people who are experts at psychology and psychiatry who have looked at it and said it wasn't, it was fake. And do you think he lied about having the affair?
I've never heard from anybody with an expertise in psychology or psychiatry that's read that letter that said, I don't think it's true. I think that's nonsense.
Okay.
I mean, literally, as you read the letter, you can see the drugs taking effect on him. I mean, you can see the effect on his handwriting. I think that's ridiculous. I believe that letter was absolutely sincere and that his suicide attempt was absolutely sincere. I mean, I personally have seen the man suffer. You know, I've seen it right before my eyes. So no, I absolutely reject that. I think that suicide note letter is absolutely real. I mean, the idea that he would go off and for some reason create this letter is ridiculous. Why would he? He wasn't a suspect. Nobody was investigating George Anthony at the point that he tried to commit suicide. So why would he feel the need to create this letter? You know, that the idea that he was suspected of anything only exists in Jose Baez's imagination. It didn't exist in real life.
You're absolutely right.
So, you know, I just think that's I think that's unfair to George. I don't think that's what he did. And you know, when you really look at George, George is a really, really bad liar.
Mm-hmm.
He just really is terrible at it. And to create this criminal mastermind image of George Anthony, and to see this bubbling, this babbling idiot on the stand who can't even tell the simplest lie convincingly,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just the two are just completely inconsistent. You know, if George were a good liar, he would have done much better on cross-examination than he did. As far as the affair goes, I don't know, and honestly, I don't care. You know, if George found solace in the arms of another woman, that's between him and Cindy. I don't really care.
Right.
The River Cruise, the woman involved, was about as uncredible a witness as I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You know, he could have, he couldn't have, but if he did, you know, I under the circumstances, you know, that's between him and his wife. I just don't think that matters at all.
I have a lot of empathy for George, and I know some people are really angry with him, and I just think the man has been through hell and back. I think he's got a tough situation at home. I can understand why he might find, you know, some company elsewhere just to have something pleasurable in his life, and that is his business.
And just to have some, you know, I mean, yeah, it's not to defend it, but, you know, it must have been difficult for him at that point in his life.
Right.
To not have anybody really focusing on him. And so maybe he did and maybe he didn't.
And not to even have anybody say a kind word to him, you know.
Right.
It was just constant stress and screaming and, oh, my God.
So, you know, you can kind of understand that. But
I absolutely can. Okay, we have 8 zillion questions in the chat room. We're talking with Jeff Ashton, former Casey Anthony prosecutor and author of Imperfect Justice, Prosecuting Casey Anthony. Kim, sir, let's start shooting those questions out, my dear.
Okay, I have a question from Christy. She asked this on WebSleuth and the chat room. During the trial, this is what Christy said. During the trial, I was really hoping to hear more about the studies on the water levels where Kaylee was found. Is it possible that the location Kaylee was found was not where she was originally placed? It seemed like when the water level rose, the plastic bags would have risen to the water surface, and maybe wind and water caused the change in location.
We didn't put on the water level, the hydrology evidence, because by the time, you know, we got into the trial, the defense was no longer claiming that the body had been placed there, you know, sometime later in that year. And they pretty much conceded that the body had been there since June. So it really wasn't an issue. The evidence that we would have that could have been presented basically would have shown that the water levels really didn't rise until mid to late August. So by that point, the body had been there for 2 months, and I have no doubt that those bags were shreds by then. I mean, you have animals, you know, getting into the bags. So, you know, I don't believe that the water would have floated anything. Anything would have floated anywhere. There's no reason to believe that.
Hold on, Kimster. I have one question I do want to get in here. Zippity asks, please tell us what transpired that set Casey's furious-faced explosion at Jose Baez. It happened on June 24th. Do you know anything about that?
June 24th,
remember
during
when
the trial?
Remember she exploded and she was, like, screaming and she was gritting her teeth? And
No, I don't remember. I don't remember that, what that was or what that would have been. I don't recall. June 24th? Yeah. So I don't know.
Okay.
Was that
well,
maybe
that's
when the plea agreement, when there was a plea deal being discussed? I can't.
It's around that time, but I don't remember. I just don't remember seeing that. It may have been something that was shown on TV or online when I was, you know, looking at something else, or maybe not even in the courtroom. I just don't recall that.
Okay, that's fine. There's so much to try and remember. I think we're having a little phone trouble, and I think it's because we have so many people listening. It's probably bogging down the server, which is a good thing. Kimster, what other questions do we have for Mr. Ashton?
We have a question from Hang'em High. She would like to know, Mr. Ashton, did you start writing the book during the trial?
No, I didn't. I didn't start writing the book until the trial was over and until I'd, you know, done my media appearances in New York and then came back. And then a week or so after that, we started, maybe 2 weeks after that, we started working on the book.
When did you decide to write the book? I know you didn't start during the trial, but when did the idea come into your head?
Well, you know, throughout the 3 years, people were constantly, you know, saying to us, to all of us, oh, you should write a book, you should write a book. You know, it's sort of a constant thing people say. And it really wasn't something that I'd planned on. It was sort of something that I thought might happen. I had never written the book. I don't like to write particularly, mm-hmm. and I didn't really think I would do it myself, by myself, because I know I didn't have the talent for that. It really came up sort of as a natural progression of the case. I mean, the suggestion came from the publisher a couple of days after the verdict, and it kind of flowed from there. So it was not something I planned on, but something that I knew might be an option.
Mm-hmm. That's, well, yeah, I mean, certainly we're all delighted that you actually did that. It's absolutely wonderful for us, because we needed to see the background and to hear it from your point of view, because it was very frustrating. Kimster, do we have a few more questions?
Oh, yes, we do. Ember wants to know if the duct tape came from Ohio. The duct tape that came from Ohio, did George bring it over from Ohio?
We don't think so. No, he didn't. I mean, they moved from Ohio in the mid-90s, and that tape was made like in the, I think, from 2005 to 2007 or something like that. So, no, we always figured he just bought it at Lowe's. That's what was being sold.
Mr. Ashton, there was a point, I believe it was when Jose Baez was giving his closing arguments, where the judge chastised you a bit for laughing.
My smirk, yes.
Your smirk. Do you regret that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I wish I hadn't done that. I went back and looked at the tape, the videotape, to figure out what it was that struck me at that particular moment. And, you know, it was a combination of the argument that Jose was making, which was one of the sillier arguments. And I think what really got me was there was a point when he got real excited and his voice shot up like an octave or two. And I guess I found it so amusing, the high voice and the ridiculous argument, that I kind of smirked a bit. So I shouldn't have done that, though.
We were laughing with you. Yeah,
It's okay. It's okay for y'all to do it, but I should.
We were all thinking that. We have one question from the chat room that was actually going to be my last question, but I'm going to throw it out to you here. Sites like Web Sleuths, I'm going to preface my question with this. I understand that Web Sleuths and other sites can be a hindrance at times. They can be annoying. They can cause you problems. But in general, do you find them helpful or do you not?
Well, you know, I think there were a couple of occasions when you know, we got things from blogs that were helpful. I think that the availability of the information is a good thing, because you essentially have hundreds of eyes looking at the documents and sometimes finding things that you might overlook or miss or not, you know, get that perception on.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that sometimes it became an annoyance when people would email us directly.
Right.
That sometimes got to be a bit much, because we would get lots and lots of emails, and I know people were wanting to help, but sometimes people would kind of be very persistent, and that became just a bit of a chore. But overall, no, I think it was helpful.
Well, and let me just tell you one thing about Web Sleuths, just to kind of toot our own horn here. We always say, do not bother the investigators. Do not do that. I mean, if they feel there really is something, yes, send them an email, but that's it.
Right.
And we never, ever, as far as a representative from Web Sleuths, ever call or bother the police or the prosecution, because we know that that is a problem, and we want law enforcement to come to Web Sleuths and to feel comfortable coming to Web Sleuths. So and know that we're not there to interfere and be the, you know, nosy busybodies that cause problems. Not at all. We want to be considered helpful and not a hindrance always.
Great.
Kimster, you got some more questions. I know you do.
Yes, I do. I still have a ton. Chef Mom wants to know, and I'd like to know this myself, how is Linda doing?
She's doing very well. She's doing very well. She got a promotion. She's a higher level supervisor than she was at the trial, and she seems to be doing very well. Not getting into trial as much as she'd like, but she seems to be doing fine.
Okay, Kimster, go for it. We have just a few more minutes.
Okay, here's the big one. A lot of people have asked this question, but the first one that I saw ask it was too curious. Do you know who Kaylee's father was?
No, we don't. We have never gotten a straight answer. You know, we've had the that it was Jesse, and that was disproven. We've had the story about some young man from Georgia that came down and got her pregnant and then died in a car accident, and that really has never panned out. Actually, when she was given her statement to the psychiatrists, she told them that she believed that Kaylee was the result of a date rape at a party.
Oh, brother.
That was the last story. So, no, we don't know, and I don't think we ever will.
Mr. Ashton, can I just plead with you to stay a few minutes? We just have a few more questions.
Sure, I can give you a couple more minutes. That'd be
okay,
fine.
Okay, great. Okay, AZ Lawyer, one quick question, my dear.
Well, if this is my last question, I'll ask, wouldn't it be fun if Casey sued you for defamation?
Yeah, that would be. That would be fun. That'd be a heck of a trial, wouldn't it?
That would be.
I think so. And I would want to help out.
And, thank you.
And one more quick question.
Yes, I've got one quick one that I would like. I think it'll help add a little closure here if it's what I think it is. I posted something last week where I get a lot of satisfaction. It's taken me a while to think that Casey's all about attention, and I love that all the networks are running from her. Nobody wants the backlash. She's in hiding. She's not getting the attention that she's always lived for. So she may be free from Orange County Jail, but to me, she's still a prisoner, and I don't think she'll ever be. Do you feel the same way? Do you feel like she's miserable?
I don't think she's having the life that she thought she would have when she got out of jail. You know, I'm sure that for her it's difficult to be sort of closed off and in hiding, and I'm sure that whoever is keeping her is probably treating her well, thinking that she's going to be a cash cow someday.
Right.
But that someday seems to be getting farther and farther away and less likely. So, you know, there's a day will come when whoever's maintaining her will realize that she's not the gold mine they thought, and she's going to have to take care of herself someday, and that's going to be difficult for her, I'm sure. But I think, you know, I'd heard somewhere something about she'd probably leave the country, which, you know, that may well be the case, and perhaps wouldn't be a bad suggestion either.
Okay, Kim, sir, we're going to take one more question from the chat room, and then I will wrap things up with Jeff Ashton. Go ahead.
All righty. This one is probably one of the biggest questions out there still. Ollie, too, asked this one. Did Kronk's girlfriend, is she really the one who led Kronk to the body because she overheard Casey talking? Is there any possibility of that?
No. If I recall correctly, his girlfriend was like a secretary at the corrections department. So there's no way that she would have overheard anything or really heard anything. And so, no, we talked to the people who were with Kronk when he found the remains the first time. And it appeared to be exactly as he said. He just went back there to take a leak, and he saw this, and he told them about it, and they all thought he was full of shit. Pardon the expression. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No, it's true.
And basically, you know, blew him off, as the cops eventually did. So, you know, no, I don't think there's any truth to that.
Do you think, and we're going to wrap it up with this, that Casey Anthony could kill again?
I mean, I don't think Casey Anthony is a danger to adults. I mean, I would be very concerned if she were ever in custody of a child again.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, I don't really see her as a danger in that sense.
But if she had another baby, which I fully believe she will get pregnant again to try and get a man, do you feel that baby would be in danger? I do. I do 100%.
I would be very concerned about the safety of that child.
Mr. Ashton, you have been such a doll. Thank you so very, very much. and I would tell everybody to go buy your book, Imperfect Justice, Prosecuting Casey Anthony, but they already have.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
And, you know, I would like to call on you again if when we need an expert that will speak the truth and cut through the baloney and go right to it. So, everybody, Beach, AZ Lawyer, and Kimster, say goodbye to Mr. Ashton.
Thank you, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, y'all. It's been fun.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you. And Beach and everybody, hang on the phone. We're going to continue the conversation. And thank you very much, Mr. Ashton. Tell your family thank you for, you know, for letting you come on for just a bit, okay?
You bet.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, let's continue this conversation for a little bit here. AZ Lawyer, what'd you think?
Well, I thought that it was very helpful. It was very nice to have a real direct talk about the trial and the whole situation instead of just guessing about what was going on.
Exactly. Go ahead. Keep going.
No, and I thought we got some answers to some questions, and I think we confirmed that in a lot of cases, much as some of us suspected, we knew the things that we don't know, they don't know either, unfortunately.
Exactly, and that's frustrating because we want to know all the deals. Ms. Beach, what did you think?
I thought exactly the same as AZ. I thought that he confirmed, especially with AZ's duct tape question, but confirmed that exactly the way we had looked at it, we were pretty much straight on the money. I think just great. I think he sounds, you know, his attorneys go, this is another case. I think he's glad it's over. I think he's glad to be moving on. And I was very, very glad to get his take on Judge Perry's reaction and what he thought, because he knows him better than anybody, and that's how I looked at it. And I was glad he was so candid with that.
Exactly. It was really good to hear him. You know, when he canceled last week, he called like about 4 hours before the show, and he was so apologetic and so sincere that I was so excited even more about the interview, because I knew he would be very, very sincere. In fact, he called me today to reassure me that he was going to be here. So that's pretty amazing that he would do that. Kimster, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I just think he is just such a gentleman, and I am so happy to see our members get such a kick out of having him on the show. And I also agree, you know, I'm impressed with how much our sleuthers did figure out ahead of time. I mean, months ago, even before some of the discovery came out, we knew a lot of this information.
Mm-hmm.
I came to Web Sleuths because of when Kaylee first went missing. And so I'm amazed at how much our sleuthers figured out. And I think that what's really important about this trial is that we need to remember a lot of this information when we're trying to figure out how to help solve other missing cases in the future.
Exactly. And one thing I want to point out, because, guys, there's a little behind-the-scenes information. I fight daily, and so does Sosumi, my business partner and co-owner of Web Sleuths, and we all do, the administrators, moderators. We fight daily the misconception that we are a hindrance to law enforcement rather than a help, especially still in areas of law enforcement. People look at Web Sleuths and think that we're just like all the others, you know, and which we know we're not, but they think all the others, like gossipy and mean and all of that, and we're not, and that we're just meddling and we just want to cause problems. And you heard Mr. Ashton talk about the email problem, where people would just email. If they get the email and they don't do anything, there's a reason for it. You know, maybe send one more, but that's it. You know, and it hurts all of us when people behave in that manner. And we have to let law enforcement know that Web Sleuths is different. We don't allow gossip. We don't allow foul language. We don't allow just ridiculous chit-chat on and on. We don't allow trashing of people. And that's the other forums do, and we don't. And slowly but surely, law enforcement, the FBI, all of these people are finally coming to realize it. But keep that in mind. That's why we don't. That's why I don't call law enforcement. I don't. Or prosecutors or anybody. I absolutely do not. There's been a couple of times when there have been situations with a poster that I needed to verify something that I have called, but that's about it. I don't know if you remember, Kimster, when I had my conversation with Cindy Anthony. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. That was
exciting. Interesting. She told me she'd hired a lawyer to close down the sites that were saying bad words about Casey. That's exactly what she said, if I remember correctly. And I was calling her to verify that somebody was talking to her, and they were reporting back on WebSleuth what she said. And I don't know if I've ever said this publicly, but I firmly believe that she was on WebSleuth under another name and posting misinformation. I can't prove it. That's my opinion. But I think somebody in the Anthony clan, I believe, very easily could have been on WebSleuth posting misinformation for a reason. And, again, Cindy said she never heard of WebSleuth, but yet we know that she had hundreds of pages printed out from WebSleuth that they found in her garbage. I mean, you know, so it's hard to believe anything she says. George, I feel sorry for. My heart breaks for him. I think he's in a terrible situation. I think he has Cindy on one side just yammering him in his ear and Casey on the other doing all of her stuff. And I just feel like he's worn down to a nub of a human being. And I feel bad for the man. I really, really do. Okay, let's see. Should we wrap it up with some final thoughts? AZ Lawyer, final thoughts tonight, my dear?
You know, since you were talking about George, I did want to say I don't feel that his lying about the affair created so much of a problem with the jury as his lying about the evidence, like the gas cans.
Exactly.
And so I think that his lying certainly had an effect on the jury, but it wasn't. I don't think it was about the River Cruise situation.
Well, you're probably absolutely right. And Ms. Beach, what do you have to say?
Well, I was going to touch on the same thing. In fact, AZ, I don't know if you've gotten to that part of his book, but he says that himself, that in his book, Jeff reiterates that George regretted his deposition, you know, where he really fought the duct tape by the time the trial came around, that was one of the biggest hurdles he had to overcome, and that hurt George's credibility was when he, you know, they could impeach him with his deposition because he had a different take on it at trial. So, yeah, I think that was the same thing. But I totally agree with you, Trisha. I know a lot of our members do not agree with me about George, but, you know, the worst thing that can be said about George as far as I'm concerned, and that's his own, it's his own choice if he wants to stay with Cindy and keep his family together. But
yeah.
I always felt, even before Kaylee's murder, I always felt that George was the one in the family that tried to expose her and tried to hold her somewhat responsible when he tried to, you know, show Cindy who she was and when she was lying. And, you know, they always told him, quit being a cop, quit being a cop. And, you know, retrospect, you know, hindsight, I'm sure he has a lot of demons of his own. He's wondering if he had done it differently.
Well, exactly. And again, as far as George goes, you know, if I saw him, I would hug him. I just think he tried his best, but I don't know if any of you know somebody who, a man especially, married to a woman who just constantly just is like fingernails on a chalkboard, no matter what he does is wrong, and just nag and nag and nag and nag. You break down and you become a robot and you just do anything you can to keep peace because you're like a trained seal almost. And I feel like, and it's just my opinion, I feel like if George could get out of that situation and be on his own for a little while, the fog might lift and he might be able to find some happiness. That's just my opinion. And I could be way off base. I don't know. But Cindy and her denial is something that I think none of us have ever seen before or will see again. The denial, you could have a video of Casey putting the duct tape on Kaylee and she would deny it. And that's what's just absolutely shocking. Kimster, final thoughts, my darling.
Hello there.
Hi, final thoughts. Final thoughts. That's okay.
My final thoughts on this are, I really hope that Casey does not sell her stupid interview for $750,000, $500,000, $250,000, or whatever. I keep seeing that the major networks are sticking their nose up at that, and I'm very thankful. And I agree with Mr. Ashton that we should just ignore her, and that would be the best thing to get her back on.
Right.
On that.
And I just want to comment. Jane the Dude said that George isn't the victim, Kaylee is. I agree. I'm not saying George is a victim necessarily, yeah. Not at all. You know, he chose his bed and he's lying in it. I'm just saying I feel bad for him because of everything, how it went down. And I think at his heart, he just is a confused, miserable person. And I feel bad for him on one human being to another. I just feel bad for him. But no, Kaylee, and we all agree, Kaylee is really, truly the only victim here. But I think it's important. And I know a lot of you didn't like Dr. Keith Abloh on that I had had him on last week, but I think or the week before. It's very important, and I agree with Dr. Abloh on this, that we look at how Casey became created, what happened, and how do we stop that cycle of creating children that grow up to do things like this. I'm not blaming the parents. I'm just saying information and understanding is the key to stopping all of this abuse and these problems that we have with people in general. Find out the behavior and what causes the behavior, and then you can stop it. That's what I'm saying. Okay, excuse me, I need to get down off my very high soapbox here and tell you one more thing. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the guests and yours truly, and of course I take no responsibility for them, especially my own. Web Sleuth Radio is not the same as websleuth.com, which is a completely different corporate entity. Next week, our show is going to be on Monday, December 26th, the day after Christmas, as we do an update on the JonBenet Ramsey case. And yes, it is an update, and we will have news. It is going to be a fantastic show. It will be Monday the 26th. It'll be an hour later than normal, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. We will see you on the website, websleuth.com. Kimster, AZ Lawyer, and Beach, and everybody in chat and on the forum, thank you so much. I love you guys. You guys are my life, and I appreciate all you do. Take care. Good night.